What's going on? What are you still working on? Tanya Dumaskigo, then on Zewa Dahusa Dutch, Unguahuan, and Hadiwa Nodus, and the Aboriginal Voices, Oska Dewa Nyawar Oska, Ne Jota FM, CFRC.
It's 7 o'clock, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. Hour two.
And you know, it's interesting how, well, it's been warm this summer. We're just over a week and a bit past the solstice, but my goodness, hasn't this been incredible? Heat wave, then cooler, now heating up again. It's quite fascinating how weather works.
Yeah, you never know.
You know, I had an interesting conversation with Kristen Buckley.
Who's that?
It's a contributor to Aboriginal Voices over the past several years. Yeah, she's been really good. She did another one for us that we're going to use this hour. But in our conversation, she had heard that we were going to be doing that. She must have been listening a week ago because she heard we were going to do Cooking Outdoor by the Fire. And she brought something for me to share with you. On the fire, there's cedar planks. Have you ever cooked with cedar planks?
I've not. Ooh. Oh, wait a minute. I had. Sorry.
Oh, you did. Okay.
I did once, like a million years ago, and I did the whole thing that it said to do, except one thing, and that caused me to never want to cook on cedar plank again.
Well, you're going to watch then. Or you're going to help me. You're going to help me. Yeah, because that was one of the ideas that she brought. And she makes them.
Yeah,
these cedar planks. So that's great. But she also said that one of the ideas about, you know, we were talking about menus and that sort of thing. But she said, you know, ask people to think about getting recipes from their own community. There might be church groups, school groups, just a gathering of people who share recipes and created a sort of a community cookbook. Check those ones because there are a lot of really interesting foods that you can make. So that's her suggestion, and she's going to talk about it in a few minutes with us. Not that part, but she's going to talk about being in the outdoors and the importance of education outdoors. So, yeah.
Sounds
it's interesting.
Good.
Yeah. So, Kristen, don't worry. We'll get you going here to talk about it. And you're going to be all set for next week, right?
I will, yeah.
You're going to bring your Dutch oven? Your cast iron Dutch oven?
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, I will. I don't remember what I made last year, but...
I'm pretty sure it was a cake.
Was it a cake? Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was.
Figure.
Either that or baked beans.
No, it wasn't beans.
Oh, okay.
That takes too long.
Well, that's the whole idea.
Does it? Yeah. Is it? Well,
yeah.
Then you got to be out there.
Then you... Yes. Yeah, but you can do other
inside.
Things around.
Oh, I'd rather be inside goodness. Doing things.
All right.
There's less bugs inside.
Tom Wilson, you and Tom had a chat.
I did. Maybe 2 weeks ago. It was in, maybe longer than that. It was in preparation for his, what do you call, show, I guess, the Mohawk Symphony that he was doing. Over there in Picton at the Regent Theater in Picton. So he does make reference to that, but I think more so it was just a conversation, right?
It was.
Between two guys.
People are going to love it.
I hope so.
I certainly did.
I would hope that, that other people love it.
All right, so I want to start...
Did we mention that it was on my phone?
No.
Okay, it was on my phone.
and you recorded it on your phone.
Yeah, right, completely from my phone. No other stuff was involved.
Wow.
It was just the phone. That was interesting, to say the least. I looked for several alternatives, and then I noticed that there was this button on a phone call to, I think, you, and I was like, wait a minute, let me try that out. So we did. Mm-hmm. I think it was you and me, or maybe it was somebody else.
Yeah.
But anyways, it worked. And maybe we can do it that way.
That sounds good. All right. Well, we're going to go to that. But first, I want to share with listeners the song that Tom Wilson put together. It gives the sense of what kind of music he has. But I think that he's so eclectic that maybe we'll have to play a couple of songs after the talk that you guys have.
All right.
Okay.
Oh, what? Blue Moon Drive?
That's it. Blue Moon Drive.
All right.
Here we go.
to hear that.
Sure did.
Alrighty. How are you doing?
Doing all right. I'm just been fighting Toronto traffic this morning, so you know how much fun that can be.
Oh my gosh, you know what? It's the best time ever.
Woohoo!
So you're in traffic right now. Whereabouts are you headed?
I just got off on Islington. I'm going to the Sony studios. I'm finishing a soundtrack for the next Tanya Talaga film.
Oh, no way.
And yeah, I'm going in to do a vocal on a song that I wrote for the movie. I did all the, you know, all the, I create music that you never hear, but you would miss if it wasn't there, basically. I got a couple more films coming up over the next 12 months. But I was so inspired by this film that I thought that I would write a song for it, and she loved it, and the producers loved it. And then I asked Tanya, she was coming home from the Cannes Film Festival, and I texted her over there, and I said, listen, I said, this kind of needs your touch on this, Tanya. Would you mind thinking, you know, if you could come up with a few lyrics? Anyway, she wrote this lyric on the way home on the plane overseas, coming back to Canada, and now I'm going in to record our group effort.
So this is a bit of an exclusive then.
Yeah, for sure. It feels good. It feels good to be working. Well, it's great working with her. I love her. Uh-huh. And her work is absolutely phenomenal. And her her intent is right. And you know, her integrity is unnudgeable. You know what I mean? You can't deny the hard work that she does and the incredible work that she's doing. You know, it's like it's great to be writing a song with the best-selling author in Canada. How's that?
There you go. What's the film about?
Film is about the first land back movement in Kenora, Ontario.
Oh, so is it more of a documentary or a theatrical?
Pretty close to it, yeah. Pretty close to documentary style, that's I'd say.
Cool. You say you're writing music like most of us breathe, you know. It just seems like an off the cuff kind of thing that you do. Where do you think that comes from?
I think it just comes from a lifetime of doing it. I mean, anything that it's so funny that you say that off the cuff, because I mean, really. The creative process, I mean, we're all just making it up as we go along. If we allow ourselves to, we've been trained, of course, through the education system and through governments and churches and corporations to not trust our instincts, you know, to not trust ourselves. We're all 100% creative beings. We all have that desire in us too, that we kind of stifle that for common sense, you know. And mine comes from that place. I actually my wife laughs at me because I am when I'm painting, I don't use a pen. I go right in there either with the oil and start painting, or I use an oil marker, Sharpie style, to outline what I'm doing. She says, you should be using a pencil. I said, well, I'm kind of committed to the moment. So being committed to the moment, I guess you could consider spur of the moment.
Yeah, spur of the moment.
Yeah.
So I'm going to probably mess this up, but you've been making professional music since the early 80s?
I've been doing this for 50 years, since I was 16 years old, 1975.
Oh, wow.
I started playing my first gigs. I started playing in church, like most people do in that era.
Uh-huh.
And then I started working, finding myself gigs in coffee houses and festivals and things like that, you know. So it's been a long life of performing, I guess, you know.
So you say you started in church. Like,
yeah.
In Hamilton or
in Hamilton, yeah.
Did you just go out and like travel around to churches and sing?
Like, oh no, I just played like at masses, you know. I mean, they had back then they used to have things called folk masses and things like that, you know, where they would you know, I don't know, I can't remember completely, but you know, like one Sunday a month they would let the organist off the hook and they would have the hymns performed or spiritual songs performed by guys with guitars and upright basses and things like that. I don't know. I haven't been to church for about 4 decades, so I actually don't know. I don't know if they still do that or not.
Yeah. No, I just found it interesting. Now, do you think that education influences any other part of your music?
The church?
Yeah, like you starting out in church, that those cadences, well, and whatnot.
You know, those things that we learn as a kid, you know. I mean, I've got a lot of respect for faith. I just don't really want to be going to church, and I'm not even going to get into that subject.
No, but I understand.
The opportunity to be able to perform music, that desire overruled everything. So I found a little bit of a door opening, you know, in the church for me to be able to stand and perform, which is what I knew I wanted to do. And I was able to grow once I started getting out and playing, you know, I ended up in, you know, from the church to the bar room, you know, like Pop Staples, you know, Pop Staples dragged his daughters, you know, out of the church and into the bars, you know, because he said that's where the word needs to be heard. And whether that word is one from organized religion or comes from your own spiritual place, you know, we're looking to write and perform messages and songs that resonate with people. So, you know, it's been a lifetime of looking for an audience, and we continue, you know. I mean, you still see the greatest writers of our time, of our generation, out there still playing, still looking to have their material resonate with an audience, you know. It's a lifelong commitment, you know. I mean, it's not a, you know, the creative world, the performing world, the art world is not something that is just in a class that lasts 60 minutes, you know, between math and chemistry. You know, it is a, it's a lifelong commitment, and one that I've been happy to be a part of, I'll tell you that much.
Mm-hmm. You speak of the great musicians, the great songwriters. Do you feel yourself in that category?
Oh, fuck no. I don't even consider myself an artist. I mean, I got paintings, you know, hanging in the McMichael Gallery, you know, which is about, to me, the most prestigious gallery in Canada, and I still don't consider myself an artist. I consider myself somebody working to be an artist. I feel like I'm working to every day to discover more about myself. So I think that road is going to be how I'm going to continue on that road, only because it's the only road I know. And once we start calling ourselves something, then we're kind of we're not doing ourselves any favors, you know what I mean?
So it's not about the destination, it's the trip.
It truly is, you know.
Okay.
That's fine.
It's such a nice way of thinking about it.
There,
I would say that there are less talented people that would claim to be artists, and you're kind of the opposite.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, the angriest people, you know, and the most negative people are the people that are frustrated, because they've decided that they're going to be something and didn't realize that the work that they do every day is what makes them closer to that. You know, I don't know if I'm explaining myself properly, but
no, I'm getting it.
I got asked the other day, which I have an art exhibit opening in Hamilton, and I was doing a TV interview, and the TV interviewer, they don't have an opportunity like you do to actually have a conversation of any kind of depth, you know. So she said, I always steered away from the art world because it always seemed so snobby and pretentious. And I said, well, that's because the people who are snobby and pretentious are people that don't have the confidence in what they're doing, you know. Every day that I wake up, I want to create something that wasn't here yesterday. Okay. That might be something that is really amazing, or it might be something that's total shit. It doesn't matter. It's the actual execution of trying to make it happen, you know?
Okay, so you're learning by doing, you're creating by doing.
Yep, learning to crawl every day.
That's good. You got a lot of history here. A lot of travel, I think.
Yeah, well.
You've done a lot of things. The junk house.
Yeah.
The Florida Razors. How'd you find yourself in Florida? Or is that just what it was called?
That's just what we called ourselves. We couldn't come up with a name. We were playing punk bars, playing rockabilly and rock and roll at Larry's Hideaway and The Edge and every punk bar from Detroit to Montreal. And we needed a name for the band, and we just put those two words together. I clearly did not think it out. But it's 2025, and you're still mentioning the Florida Razors, so you know what I mean? It was a band that was totally independent. We sold weed and speed and vinyl records out of the trunk of my car. I was kind of like the underbelly version of Colonel Saunders, you know, selling chicken out of the trunk of his car. So, that's how we survived. And of course, Junk House got signed in 1993 to Sony and started getting hits all over the world. And we were a bunch of knuckleheads from Hamilton that never expected to get off the 401. And they were sending jets for us and flying us to Scotland. And we were playing concerts in castles with Oasis and Jeff Buckley and all kinds of, you know, crazy, heady stuff that occurred during that time. And it was very short, you know, that world travel. Uh-huh. And, you know, since then with Blackie and the Rodeo Kings, I mean, I've also achieved things that I never even dreamed were possible. You know, I never thought that I'd be playing at the Ryman Auditorium on a Saturday night in Nashville, Tennessee for the Grand Ole Opry. I never dreamed that was possible. So the things that we, and at the same time, I never dreamed that I would write a book and it would become a bestseller. I never dreamed that there would be a film about that book. I never dreamed that I would have a piece of art in the McMichael Gallery. Those things are not things that I thought about when I was working to create every day, you know. I'm 66 years old on Monday, and I've worked hard my entire life, and I'll probably keep on working until, you know, you come around and throw dirt on my grave.
So you're a group, you're a bunch of guys from Hamilton, and then you're suddenly whisked away to Scotland?
Well, you know, we were just out doing gigs, right? We were touring in Europe.
Right, but what does that do to you? Like, does it say to you that, hey, we're pretty good? Did you have that assumption beforehand?
I think I was pretty good. I don't know. I don't think that getting on a plane and flying to play in a castle in Scotland defines you as good or bad or, you know, somewhere in the middle. It's just something that happened, you know. Being good at what I do, I don't know. You know, I mean, being good at what I do, for me, consists of what kind of a vocal I'm able to do today here at the Sony Studios. You know, that's my job today. My job back then was getting on stage in Scotland and doing a show. My job back then was getting on a plane flying to Australia or Japan or Europe and playing one concert after another. There was nothing about that lifestyle that was healthy. You know, you stick old records and a bunch of Junos on yourself, and it's amazing how much people want to give you to tear you down. You know, they're either opening a bottle or sticking something under your nose or trying to have sex with you. And when you're in a vulnerable situation like that, you take advantage of it all. And I did, and I crashed and burned. And as Bill Withers said, the great Bill Withers said, it's amazing how good looking you get when you put a gold record on your wall. It's a fabulous quote, and it kind of, you know, it kind of describes the situation perfectly, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
Drummer from Junkhouse lives in Belleville.
Okay.
Yeah, he lives. He's married to Astrid Young, Neil Young's sister.
Goodness sakes! Right here in Belleville.
Oh, yeah. Well, Neil just lives north of there, right?
Oh, does he? Of course he does. Driving his electric cars and
doing his thing.
Mm-hmm.
The rich is gone and hopefully happy as.
Good, good. So you've met all of these people that most of us would dream to meet.
I guess, you know, I mean, Junkhouse, you know, we toured with everybody from Bob Dylan to Green Day, you know, and it was everybody, you know, the thing about that life is that everyone's on the job, right? You know, you're picking up the phone and calling me and mm-hmm. doing an interview. You're on the job.
Yep.
You know, you could be sitting beside Ernest Hemingway or Oscar Wilde, and they'd be sitting there doing their job too. You know, you're a writer. You write. That's it's your job. So I mean, like musicians, or hanging around with those people called superstars. It's everyone's on the job.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. But sometimes it's hard to think about it that way.
Yeah.
You know, there are people that sit back and listen to you and throw you like accolades and buy your records and everything. So there's a bit of a difference between what you do and what, you know, the rest of us do.
Yeah, I guess you're right. You know, I mean, I don't downplay that. I just make a reality out of it, you know?
Yeah.
What am I doing here? You know, is this interview for the art show I'm doing down there or the concert?
No,
I'm doing?
It's the concert.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're going to get to the concert part. Sorry. I just wanted to get some other stuff in first. Color.
Yeah, sure. Well, I hope I'm giving you some color, you know.
You're definitely giving me color.
Good.
This is wonderful. We were talking about that. And so that comes to you've done all these albums, you've written books, you've had movies made about those books, a documentary. And now you're coming to the Regent Theater.
I love it.
Picton.
Yeah. So it's a great venue. I've played there before. I've always loved that stage. And I'm bringing a chamber orchestra, okay. And we're performing songs and readings that all have been inspired by or come straight out of the pages of my first book.
Okay. That'll be nice. Now, chamber music, you'll the strings and...
Four strings, five strings, percussion, piano, and reeds.
Okay. Will you be playing at all? Or will you just
You know what? I'm on a stage with such fantastic musicians, I probably shouldn't play, but I might as well be able to help myself, you know?
Mm-hmm. And where did that come out of? I want to create a Mohawk symphony. Where did that come from?
Came out from looking for another avenue to be able to express myself musically, mm-hmm. you know, and I guess I may have itchy feet, or I just might be into exploring new ways. I mean, it's why I ended up doing string track music, is that I just started trying it out and loved it, right? Well, I hooked up with a guy named Darcy Heppner who lives in Hamilton. And he was a sax player for B.B. King for years. He was signed to Blue Note Records. And his father was the conductor of the Edmonton Symphony Orchestra. So he has this massive, generous background in being able to take my ideas and write charts for them for strings, and we create a different sonic bedding for my vocals, for my singing and my reading.
Now is everybody quote unquote Mohawk in the symphony, or is it just as a because you yourself are Mohawk and this is your
you only need one Mohawk on stage at a time, and I am it.
So these are all very talented people, but not necessarily indigenous.
Well, how's this? They're allies. They're allies to my cause, you know.
I work with allies. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. And that's happening on the 20th, 21st?
21st on Indigenous.
Okay, great. I don't necessarily want to get into it, but this seems to be a bit of also color for folks who don't exactly know your story, but you found out at a later age that you were adopted, and that you were in fact Mohawk.
That's right.
Yeah. Can you tell that story? The synopsis of that story. The story you like to tell.
Well, you know, I just get asked to tell them a lot, I guess, or people mm-hmm. ask me to come out. You know, I mean, I talk about this. I lecture. The last time I lectured on this was at the Royal Museum in Regina. You know, it was a beautiful theater too. I talk about identity. I only tell my own story. I tell my own story through my visual art, through the next book that I'm writing right now for Penguin Random House, and through my music. And some people identify me as a 60s scoop kid, mm-hmm. which I could be. But most of all, it's about the idea of having your entire existence manhandled and your identity taken out of your control. I didn't know who I was until I was 53 years old and a complete stranger told me that I was adopted. And then shortly later, I found out that the woman who acted as my cousin my entire life was actually my mother, Mary Jane Lazar. Mm-hmm. She She's Mohawk from Ganawage, and my father's Mohawk from Ganawage. And I grew up thinking I was a big, puffy, sweaty Irish guy my whole life. I turned out to be a Mohawk, and you know, basically from Ganawage.
That's interesting. And has that changed the way you write music? Do you feel that it's changed you in any way? Do you feel you are still the same person you were when you began?
No, I'm not the same person. I'm a better person, knowing who I am without identity. Without identity, what do we have to offer the world? Mm-hmm. If we don't know who we are, how can we go about making this a better world? It's very difficult. Now that I know who I am, I know what my blood is, it's freed me of the chains that have held me down. I've broken out. And now I'm able to work to create art and music that hopefully make this a better place for us to live in. And I'm able to use my voice to make people aware of the causes and the needs in this country. I'm also able to step out my front door and get arrested as a land defender, which I did a couple of years ago. Yeah. So I'm motivated. How's this? In one word, I'm motivated, 100% motivated, and I hope to be motivated to the day I die.
Cool. All right. Now, are you at your destination?
My destination?
Sony Studios. Are you there? Am I taking you away from?
They'll wait for me. You know, they're all getting paid.
That's true, I suppose. Mm.
I'm very respectful, but yeah, I'm just parked a block away right now. I'm just so that we can finish our chat, and then I'll go to work.
All right. One last. I'm going to leave the last words to you that people out there who are younger people who are out there interested in creating in building a career in music, how would your words be to them?
Well, to lead with your heart would be all I can offer them. Don't expect anybody to understand what it is you're trying to do. And if we open up our hearts, we are going to make this a better planet. We can't rely, as I mentioned before, we can't rely on churches or governments or corporations to do the work for us. We're fools to think that those institutions are going to guide this world to a better place. But if we as individuals open up our hearts and show love and respect and courtesy to everybody we meet every day, then we're going to make this a better world. In fact, if we go out today and do that, we're going to make this a better world than it was yesterday.
It's been for an hour steady until the our dead people come to us.
Of the stairs, join me, Grim, in the basement for my working knowledge of indie, experimental, post-punk, and electronic every Wednesday from 10 until 11 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM. Get ready to press record.
The Canadian Human Trafficking Hotline is now live to help victims and survivors get vital social and emergency services. If you need help, or want to help stop human trafficking, call 1-833-900-1010.
Every day you hear something new on CFRC. Can you keep up? You need a weekly recap. Catch up with What's Climbing Friday mornings at 10. The charts on CFRC.
Hey, do you want to make a real impact in the Black community? Join us where we connect you with Black-led organizations from all around the world. Get ready to get involved. Find the organization based on the location of interest. Follow us at supportblackcharities.org.
This is a day to listen, a national day for truth and reconciliation. It's Kaylee Cardinal here, and you're about to hear from Lori Hermiston, who has over 20 years of experience working on community engagement projects, advisory circles, and symposiums. This day is not just about trauma. It's about looking forward and being excited about what the next generation of Indigenous voices will accomplish.
I think that we're in such a unique time in this country right now, you know, this place that we call Canada. We're in such a unique time because we have generations of children that are being raised and that are growing up in a time where all the gifts of all of their ancestors are around them. all the lessons we've learned as a society, you know, as a society, as communities in all nations around the world, and really in our own backyard, what we've learned is that you have to take care of your land. You have to take care of your young people. You have to take care of your old people. You have to take care of your community around you, because if you don't, then it impacts all of us in so many ways. And those are Indigenous principles of knowing and being. And I think if ever there was a time that Canada, you know, is waking up to that, it's now. There's more opportunity for Canadian settler nations to really understand why the Indigenous voice and needs to be acknowledged in this country. You know, I think it's just, if ever there was a time, it is now. And really, finally, like I'll say, it's through the children. These kids are being raised now with curriculum that wasn't there when I was a kid, and wasn't there when even my daughter, who is 21 years old in, you know, December, wasn't there when she was a child. And the movement we've seen through curriculum, I mean, and, you know, to give credit to places like Downey Wenjack Fund and what they've been able to do to support teachers, you know, if ever there was a time to ask questions, it's now.
It is indeed an exciting time to be Indigenous. Find out more about Lori Hermiston's community engagement projects at adaytolisten.ca.
Aboriginal Voices, FM CFRC.
The world beats.
These are the sounds that keep it spinning.
The continuing story of today's global music.
Welcome to World Beat Camp.